Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Bill Yeomans, who's a senior fellow for justice at the Alliance for Justice. He's now a lecturer at Columbia Law School and previously taught constitutional law, civil rights, and legislation at American University's Washington College of Law, and also served for 26 years in the Department of Justice before assuming a series of management positions, including acting assistant attorney general. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bill Yeomans.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, thanks, Bill. And what do you make of the chaos at the DOJ? Obviously, it's an unusual situation to have the President of the United States essentially at war with the DOJ and the FBI, but it's reached a point where the President himself has made the top people in the DOJ, including the Attorney General himself, his enemies, and he castigates them constantly. So, you know, he's almost fulfilling the necessity of having to fire people because he doesn't have an attorney general he can work with. So, in other words, he's created his own problem and then he now seeks to profit from it. At least that's the way I see it. How do you see it?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, I agree that the combat between the president and the leadership of the Department of Justice is extraordinary. And it is all centered around one thing. We shouldn't forget that the Department of Justice has a broad mandate. It does all kinds of law enforcement, policy work, things like that. And the leadership of the Department of Justice has continued with that. But what the president is concerned about, obviously, is the Russia investigation. And this is all about the Russia investigation. He's been incredibly upset with Jeff Sessions for having recused himself. He thinks that the attorney general was supposed to protect him from the Russia investigation, not conduct the Russia investigation. And Sessions stepped aside, and the president will not forgive him. That left Rod Rosenstein, of course, the deputy attorney general, in charge of the investigation, and he appointed the special counsel, Robert Mueller. And the president has not hesitated to say out loud through Twitter things that demonstrate his hostility toward the investigation and toward the people who are conducting it. And that really has led to what is an extraordinary situation where you have the president on an almost daily basis on Twitter condemning the people who are conducting the investigation. But then these people are going ahead and trying to conduct the investigation as best as possible. So, you know, this threat now to fire Rod Rosenstein or to accept his resignation, we don't know which is really happening, if either, is extraordinary because, you know, the focus has been primarily on Robert Mueller and whether the president will fire Mueller. But Rosenstein is the guy who has the authority to make all the final calls on the investigation. So while he doesn't do day-to-day supervision of Mueller's Russia investigation, he has the authority to block anything Mueller wants to do. So, for instance, if Mueller wants to issue a subpoena and Rosenstein doesn't want him to, then Rosenstein can stop it. Same thing with, for instance, sending a report to Congress. It's entirely up to Rosenstein whether a report that Mueller produces from the Russia investigation goes to Congress. So Rosenstein is the crucial guy here. And if Trump is able to remove him from office or get him to leave his office and to replace him with somebody who is much more sympathetic to Trump's view of the investigation, he could have extraordinary repercussions for the investigation. And what it might mean is that the president would not have to fire Robert Mueller. He could stymie Mueller's investigation through a series of actions by his new deputy, who could just basically say no to steps that Mueller wants to take.
Well, all of this, of course, was accelerated by the recent New York Times story that Rod Rosenstein and some others dispute, where he is alleged to have suggested wearing a wire to record private conversations with the president, and also he mused about invoking the 25th Amendment, or at least organizing the cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment. What did you make of that? I guess you could put it in the category of the masthead of the New York Times, without fear or favor. they've been doing some pretty damaging stories about the White House, but this one, a lot of people thought, was kind of a gift to the White House.
Yeah, I think it's very hard to know what happened there, and it does seem to me that you know, these statements were purportedly made during a period of real chaos. I mean, Rosenstein had not been in office for very long. You know, he was trying to figure out what to do with the Russia investigation. And I think, you know, the stories he was sitting around with his aides and trying to sort through it all. And they threw out a lot of stuff. And it's just not clear, you know, in what context these comments were made. And I think one of the things that gives me obvious pause, first of all, the notion of wearing a wire into the Oval Office strikes me as somewhat absurd, but also the notion of invoking the 25th Amendment, you know, ultimately it would require a two-thirds vote both in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, and that, you know, simply was not a realistic option. So the suggestion that Rosenstein made these comments seriously with some intent to follow through is fairly hard to accept.
And again, I'm speaking with Bill Yeomans, who's a senior fellow for justice at the Alliance for Justice. He's also a lecturer at Columbia Law School and previously taught constitutional law, civil rights, and legislation at American University's Washington College of Law, and also served for 26 years in the Department of Justice before assuming a series of management positions, including acting Assistant Attorney General of the United States. So, Bill, at this point, you seem to have a situation where if Rosenstein resigns, then the president has the ability to put in a new acting attorney general or actually an attorney general, get rid of Sessions under the Vacancy Act. But if he's fired, that's not so clear. Am I right on that?
Yeah, that's right. The Vacancy Act is clear that the president can replace someone who resigns with any official who has gone through Senate confirmation. So that would mean someone from another agency. It could be someone from the Department of Justice. He could bring in someone from the Department of Agriculture, so long as that person is Senate confirmed. The act, though, is not clear on whether or not the president has that authority if he fires someone. I think the better view is that he probably cannot replace someone who he fires with an acting person. And that has consequences here, that the line of succession gets fairly complicated. If he can fire Rosenstein and replace him with someone of his own choosing, that's obviously what he would like to do. He could put someone in there who is sympathetic to his view of the Russia investigation and stifle it. In the natural course, though, if he's not able to invoke the Vacancies Act and to bring in his own replacement, the supervision of the Russia investigation would fall to the Solicitor General, Noel Francisco. It would normally fall to the Associate Attorney General, but there is no confirmed Associate Attorney General. So the next Senate-confirmed person in line is the Solicitor General. The Solicitor General may have a recusal problem in that he comes from the Jones Day law firm, which currently represents the Trump campaign. He can ask for a waiver from the White House, an ethics waiver that would waive his conflict of interest, which might be granted. On the other hand, if he doesn't get the waiver, then we have to go further down the line, and the head of the Office of Legal Counsel would be next in line to take over supervision of the investigation. So at this point, we don't know where it would actually land.
Well, Noel Francisco is a pretty conservative. He may be sympathetic to the White House. The Office of Legal Counsel in the DOJ, that deals with the executive branch itself, doesn't it? So what's his relationship with the White House counsel McGahn? I presume they work closely together, don't they?
Yes, they do. The Office of Legal Counsel is, in some sense, the law interpreter for the executive branch. So it issues opinions on legal issues and gives the White House legal advice. And in doing that, obviously, it works very closely with the White House counsel's office and with the White House counsel himself. And Stephen Engel is the Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Legal Counsel. And he was in the George W. Bush Justice Department. And in fact, there was some controversy over his confirmation because he had been involved in the production of some of the torture memoranda that came out of the Bush administration. But he was confirmed on a fairly close vote. While I don't have any firsthand knowledge of what he thinks about the Russia investigation, I think it's fair to assume that he would probably be more sympathetic to Trump than Rod Rosenstein has been.
Well, he sounds like he has a little bit of a similar resume to Judge Kavanaugh.
Yes, similar. I think it's worth pointing out, too, that the people who are in the line of succession have no experience as prosecutors. And obviously, it's very helpful to have a prosecutor overseeing a criminal investigation of this complexity and this sensitivity.
Well, it's very odd, though, to try and find out what the politics of this are, or at least, you know, read the tea leaves, Bill Yeomans. For example, when Rod Rosenstein showed up at the White House today, he was greeted outside of the gate by the chief of staff, General Kelly, who seemed to go out of his way to go on camera to show that he was sort of friendly and sympathetic, I guess. And then we find out that the real meeting is going to be on Thursday as to whether he is fired or resigned. And, of course, Thursday is supposed to be the day that the Kavanaugh hearing takes place with Dr. Ford testifying. But now there's a cloud over that because the Democrats are asking for the FBI to investigate a second charge that's emerged from a piece of investigation by The New Yorker. This has led, for example, Sean Hannity, the Fox News host, who's also apparently an informal advisor, if not an important advisor in this current White House. He's been cautioning Trump not to fire Rosenstein because he thinks that the whole thing is a setup. So, I mean, I don't know how can you pass the insanity of having talk show hosts essentially, you know, as presidential advisors. But this is what we have, right?
Right. Well, if we have a president who thinks of his administration as a TV show, then it makes a little bit more sense. There's all kinds of speculation about whether this is the timing of the Thursday meeting is calculated to take attention away from the Kavanaugh hearing, what? We just don't really know at this point what the calculations are. My guess is that the White House, for the reasons we've discussed, is eager to have Rosenstein announce that he is resigning rather than have to fire him on Thursday. And so it seems to me that the greeting by Kelly may have been to show that there were still cordial relations between the White House and Rosenstein, and they were not firing him, and to give him some room to agree to resignation. Beyond that, it's hard to speculate, except that I think we can be confident that Thursday is going to be a pretty amazing day, and in some respects probably a historic day.
Well, it's obvious, though, that he was either going to be fired or resign. So they're the ones that seem to be putting pressure on Rosenstein.
Right. I think they would love, they want to put pressure on him. They want to get him to resign because that clears the space for Trump to put in his person in Rosenstein's position. If Rosenstein, though, may want to hang on, he may think it's his duty to stay and be fired. And to try to protect the investigation from someone from the outside coming in. At this point, that's all speculation.
And again, I'm speaking with Bill Yeomans, who's a senior fellow for justice at the Alliance for Justice. He's also a lecturer at Columbia Law School and previously taught constitutional law, civil rights, and legislation at American University's Washington College of Law, and also served for 26 years in the Department of Justice before assuming a series of management positions, including acting Assistant Attorney General of the United States. Well, we don't know about the personalities involved, and how they think. Maybe you may well have a better handle on it than I do, but on the surface, I would think that Jeff Sessions has got to really be very unhappy with Trump and the way he's been treated. I just think that's obvious. But Rosenstein has not been treated much better. And apparently, initially, and this came out in the New York Times piece the other day, that what really was upsetting for Rosenstein and really threw him into a kind of emotional crisis was the fact that Trump went ahead and used his letter or his investigation into how Comey had mishandled the Hillary Clinton matter just before the elections, which Hillary Clinton blames on her loss of the presidency. That was used by Trump as an excuse to fire Comey, and apparently that really upset Rosenstein. So my sense is that there's no love lost here with Rosenstein and Trump.
No, I don't think there is. And we have heard the story that Rosenstein was upset. My question has always been, what exactly Rosenstein expected? You know, he went to a meeting in the Oval Office, we were told, with Jeff Sessions the day before Comey was fired, and at which Trump, I'm sure, stated that he wanted to fire Comey. We're told that he had spent the weekend before that in Bedminster at his club, fuming about firing Comey, and he came back to Washington intent on doing it. And so Rosenstein went back and wrote this memo. So it's always been my question, well, he wrote the memo, what did he expect it to be used for? I mean, it was a justification for firing Comey. It laid out the case against Comey for his mishandling of the Clinton email investigation in a very direct and convincing way. And I've always wondered what he expected to happen if he didn't expect Trump to use it as a basis for firing Comey. And that, of course, has complicated his status somewhat because he is potentially a witness in this investigation. To the extent that the firing of Comey is caught up in the obstruction of justice investigation, Rosenstein's role in the firing of Comey is obviously an important part of that Mueller needs to hear about. So I think that whole issue is confusing at this point. But I agree with you that since then there has been no love lost between Rosenstein and the president. And you know, Trump has frequently tweeted ad hominem attacks on Rosenstein. It would not surprise me at all to learn that Rosenstein would like to get out of his job. On the other hand, I have a sense that Rod Rosenstein is a serious public official who believes in public service and I think would feel some sense of responsibility to stay on if it's necessary to protect the investigation. So given all that, once again, Thursday is going to be a very interesting day.
Well, just in closing, though, the New York Times story, of course, it has exposed Rosenstein to the possibility of being fired or being forced to resign, talks about some pretty contentious meetings that took place shortly after Comey was fired, and the acting head of the FBI, Andrew McCabe, who Trump subsequently went after and managed to get fired literally the day before his pension became due in a very vindictive act. Andrew McCabe, it looks as if McCabe really went after Rosenstein for being the excuse to fire Comey. Is that your understanding?
It looks that way. I mean, McCabe produced memos, his contemporaneously drafted memos, and turned them over. And I think that was much of the basis for the story here. So, it does. it's a complicated scenario. There was clearly tension within the department and with the department and the FBI, and then with all those people in the White House. And I think we are coming toward a denouement.
Well, just in closing, though, if you look through the list of the people that Trump's attacked and tried to have fired and tried to humiliate on Twitter, Sessions, Rosenstein, McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, the top intelligence officials that briefed him on January the 6th, 2 weeks before he was inaugurated. The former head of the FBI, of course, is gone, Comey. The former head of the CIA, he's an enemy number one of Trump's. The former director of national intelligence is another public enemy number one of Trump's. It's hardly a coincidence, isn't it, that all the key people And now, of course, they've gone after Bruce Orr, who happens to be the FBI's number one expert on Russian organized crime. And we know that money laundering and the involvement of Russian organized crime in funding Trump and buying 1,300 condos from Trump. All of that stuff raises some serious questions with me.
Oh, I think it's an incredibly damning picture. You know, it is clear that Trump is fighting as hard as possible to protect himself and to suppress this investigation and to disable the people who are investigating him. And, you know, this has been called a slow-moving Saturday night massacre. But it's even more extensive than a Saturday night massacre because, as you point out, it has gone through the intelligence agencies, through the FBI, through the Department of Justice, and almost anybody who has been in a position to have the goods on Trump has been fired, except for Robert Mueller and Rod Rosenstein at this point. Again, as I say, I think we're headed toward a denouement.
Well, Bill Yeomans, I thank you very much for joining us here today. I very much appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Bill Yeomans, who's a senior fellow for justice at the Alliance for Justice. He's also a lecturer at Columbia Law School and previously taught constitutional law, civil rights, and legislation at the American University's Washington College of Law, and also served for 26 years in the Department of Justice before assuming a series of management positions, including acting Assistant Attorney General of the United States. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's apparent determination to plow through with Thursday's hearings.